Imagine a world in which post-traumatic stress no longer robs from millions who suffer.
You don't want to get help because you're embarrassed. You don't want to tell people the dark stuff that you've went through.
That stigmatism of you can't talk to people is so true.
Post-traumatic stress is not a disorder. It's an injury that can be healed quickly so that those who suffer get back to thriving in their families, communities, and mission.
And I said, I don't want to live this trauma again. Yeah. And he goes, You don't have to. Yeah. And I said, What?
The experts, they forgot to tell me I can heal. I didn't know that I can get rid of PTSD.
Each week, we tell a skeptical world what is possible with stories of those who have successfully cured their trauma.
I just remember being able to stand by the water and look up at the sky and hear the noises, and I didn't think they were gunshots. I was like, those are Disney fireworks.
I don't even know what to imagine for myself now, my future, because I have one.
This is Life After PTSD. On today's episode of Life After PTSD, we welcome a former United States Air Force Staff Sergeant turned licensed mental health counselor, often mentioned on the show. Took us 100 plus episodes to finally get her on. Cindy Knowles, welcome to Life After PTSD. It's so good to have you.
Thank you.
So good to have you. Carrie Russo with me as always. My name is Jeff McLaughlin, your host. And guys, I'm super excited for this. I feel like we get just to have sort of like a living room conversation among friends today and talk PTSD, but we get to hear Cindy's story as well. And Cindy, thank you for playing ball with this. I know we twisted your arm just a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I know the door is locked and there's no exit allowed for you and all that. I'm just kidding. All that good stuff. Carrie, I'm going to let you drive the opening part of this discussion because I think part of this is your way of having a little fun with me today as well and giving me some shock because I really haven't heard anything more than a couple of bullet points of Cindy's story. And even though we've worked together for years, we're just going to jump into that today. So why don't you do some instigation here and let's get, and then I'll just start asking questions out of my curiosity as we tell her story today.
So thank you, Jeff. I'm excited about the story because, like you said, we've been trying to get Cindy on for quite a while. And she just happened to have an opening today, and it worked. Mm-hmm. So, no, Cindy, what's interesting to me is Cindy and I went together to a training almost 2 years ago now, and were trained in an additional trauma treatment. Mm-hmm. You know, we were already trauma treatment trained and worked with a lot of trauma. And it wasn't until months after that that she and I were talking one day, mm-hmm. and she tells me this story, and I am listening going, what? I've never heard this. And I don't know if you remember saying to me, well, you know, I really didn't talk about it much. It was difficult, but I realized that it was bothering me and processed it. And so she's telling me the story. I was like, you have to tell it on the podcast. I said, could you do that? And she was like, sure. Now today, when I came to her and said that, she was like, no, I have notes to do. I have things to do.
It's because we didn't have microphones set up and it wasn't like put her on the spot time yet.
But
you know?
Cindy, haven't we processed like, speaking in public or we'll do that next.
Nice.
Go out to the future at an unspecified time. And
Sure.
You feel about that? No. Mm-hmm. No, but it's a great story. And well, it's not a great story. It's sad because it's mm-hmm. about suicide. And I said, this is Suicide Awareness Month. And yeah. I think it's a story that needs to be told.
Yeah.
Because in essence, the short version of the story is there was a suicide and it was somebody she was over.
I was a supervisor.
And mm-hmm. they were later, or she and a group of people were basically blamed for the suicide later, or they right. felt like they were blamed. So
no, we were blamed for sure because they said that we didn't do what we should have as supervisors. And one didn't have anything to do with the other.
And I know I shared with you that I have a current client right now that we've been working with and who has some of his own trauma. And he was the suicide awareness NCO mm-hmm. and non-commissioned officer for those who don't know mm-hmm. anything about military. But, and he had people, he had four, if not more people in his group that had at one point mm-hmm. or another committed suicide, and he felt very responsible. And I think that's a common theme in the military is feeling responsible for your comrades mm-hmm. and because there is so much camaraderie and you want to. And in fact, one thing he said to me was, you know, I have been suicidal and there was someone mm-hmm. there to talk mm-hmm. me out of it and to be there for me. And I wasn't able to be there for these people, and someone should have been there for them.
Sure. Is that a form of survivor's guilt? I mean, would you label it that or call that something else?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I'm just saying, we often hear on the show, we've had episodes many in the past of, you know, of the resistance sometimes for our military guys to clear trauma because they've, you know, that is perhaps a secondary gain for them. You know, it's not fair for me to go on, but it's usually been stories of somebody that's been in combat, you know, with another person. So we're talking about a different dimension of that, same category though.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so Cindy and I have talked a lot about clients. I mean, she's seen quite a few being military herself, she's sure. seen quite a few military, but she mm-hmm. sees marriages. She sees a lot of people who have Individual. Been traumatized. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought it would be, see, fun's not the right story when we're talking about suicide, but informative mm-hmm. and to yeah, hear her
gonna
story.
It's going to benefit some listeners. There's no question about that.
And it's going to, it helps somebody to hear about it.
So let's roll with the punches here for a second. Before we get started, can we talk background here? So talk sure. about, you know, former staff sergeant in the United States Air Force and everything. What was your background there? What were you doing in the service?
I worked on the F-111F aircraft and aircraft maintenance. I worked on the weapons and navigation systems. Served in Desert Storm.
Yes, lived thank you very much for
lived
serving.
Lived in a tent for 8 months.
And I love it. Lived in a tent for 8 months. And I love this. Now a licensed mental health counselor out there, like what you think you might know about your counselor.
this exactly. woman,
this woman's had so she's done some things in life, right?
Yes.
So cool. So how did you, when you finally got out and kind of transitioned, what was the transition? What was the driver behind that transition to get into the world of counseling for you?
Just because of all the things I saw while I was in the military, the way people acted, the way they responded to the different stressors that we faced while sure. we were in the military. I just felt that was really fascinating. And of course, I felt like God called me to this.
Sure, sure.
So.
Well, and I would assume that somebody working on F-111s and you worked on F-4s too. I think you told mm-hmm. me at one point that you the problem solver in you, you know, is
yes.
there is there a problem solving mind there that just likes
yes,
to help
absolutely.
Sort out problems? Yeah, I love it. So cool. So so how do we get into the story of what happened with a suicide? What would be like maybe some of the backgrounds just sort of leading up to that so the audience gets some context about what's driving our discussion today?
About the particular
airman? You were the team supervisor,
I was
right?
the supervisor for day shift and I had a young man come to me and tell me that he had some issues and it was concerning his ex-wife and his daughter.
Sure.
So we sat down, we talked about it for probably an hour. And as the supervisor, I said, you know, take the rest of the day off. I referred him to the mental health. Mm. I asked him to go talk to them and I asked him to go talk to our supervisor above just to see what we could offer him, what we could do. If was there anything that we could do to step in and help him and his family because his ex-wife was preventing him from seeing his child. I believe that was the biggest thing. And he said, okay, that's what he was going to do. He left. The next day he didn't show up for work. What we did, we called around, we did everything we could. We didn't want to report him as AWOL because we thought, well, that could be very harmful for his career.
Sure.
And then, so we spent that day and didn't tell anyone. We do admit that. Looking for him, calling hospitals.
Of course, you were looking out for him.
Trying to, absolutely.
Well, and explain for context, too, if you would. When somebody is declared AWOL, what does that do for their military career? For the civilians listening to this, what
if you're declared AWOL, that can put an end to your career. You could be separated for it.
Got it, yeah.
And so...
court-martialed, too, for that kind
yes.
of thing? Yeah, I mean...
Yes.
Okay.
So we went through that day. And like I said, we looked for him. We did everything we thought we could do. And then we couldn't find him, couldn't find any information. He wasn't in the dorms. He lived in the dorms. He wasn't there. He wasn't in any hospital. We drove around. We couldn't figure out where he was at. The next day, we were informed that he had committed suicide that night.
Mm.
He had gone to buy a gun. He left work the day I told him he could have the afternoon off. He went, he bought a gun, and he committed suicide. Then when we went to the funeral, that's where a lot of the accusations and it was by a pastor
wow.
saying that we did not pay attention as supervisors, that we did not engage him off duty, that we did not, in his mind, we should have known what was going on. We should have known that there was a problem and we should have done something about it. I did refer him to get mental health.
Yeah.
I did ask him to go talk to people. I can't make him, but I did ask him to go do those things. So,
and he said he was going to do them.
And he said he was going to do them, yeah.
So last time I checked that when you sign up for the military, you don't also get a degree as a mind reader.
No.
Correct. Well, is that not true of counselors as well?
Absolutely.
I mean, I think there's a lot of perception out there that people think, well, if I just walk in the door of the counseling office, it's like the defumigator or something like that just automatically takes care of all of my stuff. And frankly, I always think that it's what mm-hmm. you do when you leave. That's going to be more so the telling thing. If you're not
Absolutely.
Changing behavior, you're not following instruction. You know, why would somebody just being in your care and getting the advice from you, why would that change someone's life any more than having a gym membership card in your pocket and not using it, right?
And again, it's not like he said, well, he never said, well, I feel like ending my life. Sure, I don't want to be here anymore.
Sure.
You know, he was talking to me about how much he loved his daughter and how he wanted to be able to spend time with her.
Yeah. So he was reaching out for help, which is a good sign.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It wasn't like he was, I mean, as far as looking at somebody who would be suicidal, you would look at for the person who's pulling away or doing something. Yeah. Of course, I would say there really is, and people might argue this, but there really is no typical suicide. Like everybody says, oh, this one wasn't typical. Yeah. I've just decided.
You're talking about in terms of warning signs and things like that, right?
In general, like the warning signs are different for everyone because we're all really different.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's some general things, but I'm saying there's not.
Well, but also like, think about the dynamic of people who threaten. You know, there's some that threaten and threaten and threaten and threaten and never act, right?
Absolutely.
And they almost become labeled as like the boy who cried wolf or whatever. People dismiss them. And you have some that never make the threat and then do. You know, I mean, it's. Like you said, I think that's just a perfect testimony to every story being different, right?
He never threatened.
Yeah.
Yeah. But going forward, this is not something, a story that you really talked about or shared, you know, when you left. So when you left at the funeral, I do remember you saying that at the funeral. And of course, we've touched on pastors and churches, and we love churches.
Sure.
And pastors, we love them. I think they have good intention. Unfortunately, sometimes it comes across the wrong way. Like you didn't pray about it enough or you didn't.
Yeah. Well, and speaking, you guys know my background. That is my background. And I come from this issue and can only speak to where things were. Well, what I've seen along my journey and the places that I've been. And oftentimes there's this invisible war pitting against like the world of mental health versus the spiritual world. Of sorts. I think that we need to obliterate those differences there. I think those two worlds need to be in harmony. And we see a lot of that developing for sure. But I still think even today, a lot of that still exists. Like this, just the one is that's the enemy and that's whatever. And that's creating a very dangerous. So almost in a sense, you know, the pastor could have made, I obviously don't know the guy, can't speak for his attitude, but maybe on that day, who's to say he didn't have that attitude already? That sort of that bias that kind of came in and said, well, you guys were the enemy. You know, we had the, and it's, I think it's just sad. I think we all have to take responsibility and also bring our tools to the table that we can bring in the various categories.
He also spoke about those things, but he never talked to any one of us.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what we offered. He doesn't know what we actually tried to do.
Right. So the pastor, because the pastor was just talking to the supervisors, not any mental health.
He was just talking at the funeral to everyone, you know, but he specifically said the supervisors, his supervisors.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there in
the funeral.
In
so
the
that
funeral.
Was part and of the funeral, this. Like the eulogy or whatever that he was saying, and he was taking shots at,
isn't that amazing? And then those that know Cindy does not sensationalize anything.
No. So, I wish Cindy was reporting the nightly news. I might actually get a straight story for once out of things, you know?
I mean, in my mind, I'm going, what? Like, so a pastor who I would believe he was trying to do the right thing, right? He was trying to say...
Was he a personal friend of the guy, too? Is it part of that, or do you have any connection? You don't know.
I have no idea.
I mean, because part of me could understand if he's coming at this in just out of his own grief, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, brokenness and grief will make people say things that are irrational sometimes.
Absolutely.
And that are just, you know, unfair and that sort of thing. If it wasn't that, then he's got no excuse. Not that I'm trying to give him one there, but I could maybe understand that. You know, just like a family member would maybe blame a doctor if a surgery goes bad or whatever, even if there was a low chance of success, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, that just, we need something.
But
we need a reason.
You
right?
were a young staff sergeant, right? And,
yes.
And here you're sitting there going, I can imagine you and other supervisors. How many other supervisors were there?
There were about three of us.
I was thinking about this. I was remembering about there. So three people are listening to this. And not only are you listening to this, all the other people that knew him are listening to this. And they may be nodding, going, you know, because when you're a pastor giving a eulogy, you're nodding and you're listening.
You got credibility. You do.
And so now not only are you somewhat traumatized by the fact that, well, not somewhat, you're traumatized by somebody you know who committed suicide. That's horrible.
Yep.
And now you're sitting at the funeral. You feel sad. It's definitely unfortunate. And all military deal with, wow, this is really tough. Maybe not wanting to commit to... Maybe not wanting to end their lives, and but you know, just feeling really sad. Mm-hmm. And I think earlier, I just realized earlier, I think we all have used the words commit suicide. And now that has been said, we're not supposed to say that anymore.
Yeah.
We're supposed to say died by suicide. Yeah. So I just want to acknowledge that here on the show that, we apologize. We make that mistake sometimes because it's not committing. Sounds like they committed an act.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how they died. They died by suicide. Yeah. So he died by suicide. And I think I can't believe I've said it a couple of
times. Well, it's, you know, but okay, but, look, we're all learning here. I mean,
right, again, that's
suicide
what I said,
awareness month. We're all learning here, but I would ask another question about learning and just to get off track for a second, we'll regain our story track here though. But Cindy, now having done, how long you've been a therapist, how long now? How
many 13 years.
13 years. Okay. And have seen a lot of stories. All right. Mm-hmm. Seen a lot of, done a lot of work.
And a lot of healing. And,
a lot
She's
of healing.
A really powerful counselor.
Absolutely. She's fantastic
counselor. She won't say it herself, but she is.
We'll say it for you. Okay. Fantastic. I feel like we need to have an advertiser right now. Call Cindy now. We'll give you, all right. No. But in retrospect, okay, not that I'm expecting there would be anything, but, you know, would you have changed anything that you did, you know, at that point?
No, because I did what I knew to do.
Right, right.
That's it.
Yeah,
at that moment.
I expected you to say that, but I mean, that's even more of that testimony of, you know, it's one thing if I just didn't know what I was doing at that point, but you know, you've got 13 years now under your belt of mm-hmm. doing this and working with people and, you know, and so I think there's an instructive message out there for probably counselors, for family, friends, and things like that, you know, aside from the fact that every story is different or whatever, but you know, mm-hmm. you know, there's only so much that you're going to be able to do at some point, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
literally, we have the first and foremost part of our lives is our own personal responsibility for things. And while we have our spheres of influence and people that we can connect with, I mean, at the end of the day, they have a responsibility for their life too. And that's the sad reality that there mm-hmm. is this thing called free will and people can do, you know, unfortunately, they can take their lives, you know, mm-hmm. and they get to these dark places.
And yeah, on that note about free will, that's what I would say to people out there right now, anybody who is considering ending their life or even thinking about the fact that, hey, the world would be better off if I wasn't here. If you're having those thoughts, tell someone,
Absolutely.
You know, tell someone. Mm. And if that person doesn't know what to do, go to somebody else, you know, mm-hmm. don't blame them. Like find somebody else because I promise, just like our friend Heather, you know, Funk Palacios last week that was on the show. Yep. I mean, there is somebody who cares. I mean, she did not take her life and that's her mission. Yeah. She was mm-hmm. like, as long as I'm here, I'm going to help people who do not want to take their
life.
There's
no shame in getting help.
Yeah. Right. Well, then that's the problem, right? We say there's no shame in getting help, but people feel shame. And you know, if your heart is having issues or your lungs this day and age, if your lungs are having issues, we can go to the doctor and it's no big deal. I can tell somebody if my brain is misfiring, which somebody would maybe argue that.
Nah, too easy. Okay. Too easy.
No, but yeah, seriously, if our brain is not exactly misfiring or has a chemical that's not working the way it should, or we're just really sad because things are happening in the world right now. We all have COVID craziness.
I mean, people have been fed a steady diet of fear and sadness and everything else for a good 5 months now.
They're most
largely on lockdown too, you know, and, where they're constantly mm-hmm. consuming it. So yeah, I mean,
so I would just say, reach out.
Yeah.
And I know, but I want to, let's talk about the rest of your story and how you, there is a rest of the story because you went to that funeral and then you really didn't talk about it much. I don't, mm-hmm. right?
No.
How did you process that? I mean, thereafter, in retrospect, looking back, like what was your processing post-funeral on that event?
Well, actually I was pretty lucky because I had a supervisor who happened to be at the funeral who said, no, don't worry about it, that you guys did everything that you could have. She pointed out the things that we should have done as far as reporting it sooner.
Right, right.
But as far as what we did, what we offered, the steps that we took, she, you know, told us that we did a good job. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. And let's just be clear to the audience in case they didn't catch that detail, the reporting it sooner, he was already gone at that point. We're talking about procedural stuff, not in terms of how you guys would have counseled or whatever, that sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, from that point, I actually did do it at the training. That is one of the things I did during the training that you and I attended 2 years ago. So
when Alan said, okay, do you have any traumas that you want to process?
Right.
I want to talk about that because we are a show dealing with life after trauma, you know, mm-hmm. exalting the possibility that exists for people that can do that. So when did you realize that even it was a trauma for you?
Probably at the training, just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Just, you know, trying to, when he asked us, do you have anything? And you're kind of going through your little snapshots.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we had to pick some. So.
Right. And you think of, because I know when I was there, I did death of a family member.
Sure.
It was
sure.
sudden. Yeah. And, you know, you're thinking of your life and, let me think of, and when that comes up and you think, ooh, you're going to get caught when you talk about, you know, you talk about it, you think,
absolutely.
And I know for you, I remember I was fascinated when you were telling me the story later and you were completely calm. And I remember saying, how do you feel now? Now, today you might feel a little bit of angst because you just love speaking in front of people.
But it's not. Yeah. But I was saying that emotion is from us putting her on the spot, not from telling the story. Which
right.
is, right. Because
exactly.
you even already told the story with perfect, you know, transparency and lucidity and all that. Right. You know, so when you're going through the process and again, you had already been trained in trauma, you guys had already had some modalities that you've been trained in and everything. So you knew at least some of what was possible. You know, in that world. But what was your experience when you worked on that trauma? And we you know, we often use the word cleared on that trauma. Sometimes it gets us some hate mail of sorts. When we talk about clearing, what are we talking about? The ability to relate to that memory now in a non-traumatic way. It's still a
Correct.
Sad memory, right?
Absolutely.
Or it's still whatever, you know, like, but it's not, it's something that you're having panic attacks over, you're having a, like an adverse reaction to or whatever. So what was your experience going through getting your own trauma? And by the way, let's also point out too, therapist having trauma themselves? What? Is this a thing? You know? Yes, because counselors are people too, aren't they?
And right? and I want to imagine that, but I also want to point out, it wasn't like Cindy was walking around unable to function.
No.
She was functioning just fine. Mm-hmm. But when somebody said something about it, I was like, ooh, yeah, that does still sting. Yep. And what could happen or what could have happened is if someone, a client or friend or a family member or anyone had something where they had taken their life, it probably would have been much more significant because of this
Absolutely.
In her past. So
Absolutely.
It wasn't that she was walking around to, you know, couldn't handle things, but that's what's happening to people right now. I feel like with COVID craziness, things have happened in their past and this is worse because of other things that are still bothering them. They don't realize, you know, like
that's
if you're, so go ahead and tell us what happened after, you know, you worked on that and you worked on it with a stranger, I remember, because I remember we weren't allowed to work together at the training. So how was it afterward? Before, do you remember what your number was? 0 to 10 when you talked about it or thought about it?
It was about a 6.
Okay. And then afterwards?
0.
Okay.
So
that's one of the things we ask, that, you know, subjective units of distress. You know, when you think about this.
Yeah.
This situation, and if you had to tell it in great detail for whatever reason, where would you be?
Yeah.
0 being no negative emotion, 10 being a flood of negative emotion.
Yeah.
And so she would have been about a 6, which I always say military is usually
their calibration is off.
Their
we
calibration
know that.
Is off. So she probably
4 is my 15. I mean, there's no question about that.
But then within what, not even an hour, like less than 45 minutes or maybe a little longer, maybe an hour and a half, because someone who is brand new, just learning to use this technique.
Yeah, literally reading through a script, basically. I mean, you want to talk about more mechanical of a process that you went through, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it was easy.
and then it was, And so, of course, now we've been doing that and other trauma treatments for quite a while now.
Yeah.
But it's so fun because I remember one of the things that the trainer, you know, that Alan said is, okay, well, that's the worst it will ever be. You know, going through like when we were practicing it and then also doing it ourselves.
Yeah.
And I tell clients that all the time, like the first time we go through it is the worst.
Yeah.
But then also, you know, now being
It'll
able to use that with clients it's so fascinating.
So last question, Cindy, for you, you know, now that you've been through that yourself and processed, you know, your own particular trauma in this event, how has that changed your perspective in terms of working with people, you know, in terms of empathy or anything like that? Like, has that helped you at all, having gone through that?
Sure. You know?
Talk to me about that.
Sure. Well, God, when you have the trauma and you're trying to work through it or you're carrying it with you, it affects every aspect of your life, right? In so many ways. Like when I talk to my clients that have dealt with trauma, they talk about how it affects relationships, how it affects your sleep, it affects just about, like I said, every area of your life.
Yeah.
And so when you are able to clear that and then you can, you know, start seeing the improvements, like getting more sleep, not having nightmares, being able to feel happy.
Yeah.
That's huge
when
you're talking to people. And then you can see those changes. I had one client I did this very same process with. And I'll never forget, she came in and she said, that is so unreal. I've dealt with this for 8 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, it's not even there.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. And then for her, it had affected her sleep. It affected her relationships. In the 8-year period, she had gotten married.
Yeah.
And she was talking about how, you know, her husband was always having to calm her down. And she was feeling so bad because she felt like she had put a burden on him.
Yeah.
And now that burden was no longer there.
Yeah.
And so it was just really, really awesome to see.
That's awesome. Well, Cindy, thanks for sharing. I know you have to run and meet with clients here. So
yes,
real quick, why don't you just give a plug here? Because if somebody's wanting to reach out and work with you, and you can do stuff over Zoom as well, right? You can
yes.
do all kinds of stuff. How would they find you? Best way, just firstorlandocounseling.com, or what's the best
Absolutely.
Way to reach you?
Absolutely, firstorlandocounseling.com or cool. call Carrie.
Well, call Carrie. There you go.
There
That's
you
awesome.
Go.
Hey, thanks for stopping in and sharing right. your story. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
Thanks. Carrie, let's come back after the break, and we're going to process a few minutes of that and just talk about what we just discussed. So many bits of information there that are just wonderful. A lot of things to say there. So let's give them the listeners a brief. Either. Come back in just a few moments here. You are listening to Life After PTSD.
Hey, Life After PTSD listeners. We're glad that you love other stories of healing, but what about you? First Orlando Counseling is the premier trauma therapy center in Central Florida with a full staff of trained clinicians ready to help you clear your trauma without re-traumatization. Childhood abuse, relationship abuse, a traumatic car accident, birth trauma, first responder or military trauma, even phobias. You don't have to live like this. It's time for you to heal. Schedule a consultation today by visiting firstorlandocounseling.com or call 407-514-4470. It's that easy.
Here we are back with Life After PTSD. Carrie, just so many good things that Cindy just talked about there. And I think it would be awesome for us to just kind of process. I mean, I'm still sort of, you know, not to drive this point home that I was making before, but, you know, again, counselors having trauma for starters. And I just love, I feel like I have an even greater respect for Cindy. I already had a great respect for her, but even a greater respect, you know, for her having gone through something like that, clearing her own trauma, you know, because I think there's a lot of people that probably are in your world that, you know, it's, I'm not the issue, I'm not the problem, and maybe have a resistance to that for whatever reason. Maybe they don't even realize they have trauma, but, you know, your thoughts on that for starters?
I think the number one is I think most counselors have had some form of trauma, right?
Yeah.
Some form
yeah.
of trauma.
Yeah.
Or if they haven't had trauma, they have some kind of anger, sadness, fear, hurt, guilt, shame, something in their life that isn't.
That makes them human, right?
Right, that makes them human, but also is driving them sometimes in a negative direction, which is often why they go into the field of counseling,
yeah.
right? To
yeah.
help people.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
they've seen something in their own lives or in
Absolutely.
Their family, the lives
yeah.
of their family,
yeah.
That they say, ooh, that
yeah.
doesn't feel right. We need... Yeah. How can we handle this differently?
Well, we've talked about that with so many of our military, our police, first responders and everything, that there's
yes.
this deep-seated need to be a protector and everything else. It's so noble. It's awesome. But
I have a new client. He's a police officer and also
sure.
a veteran. And he was telling me his story, and I looked at him and I said, you are one of the quote unquote typical, if there is typical, right, who has had trauma in their own life, and now they want to go be a hero to
yeah.
everybody else. They
yeah.
don't want that to ever happen
yeah.
to
yeah.
anyone else.
Yeah. yeah.
And
which
and
is such again such a noble response.
Yeah.
Right.
The problem is that
yeah.
for police officers and veterans
yeah.
and firefighters that do that, often they are the ones that rush in without help, or they're impulsive,
yes.
or they do something
yes.
that gets them in
yes.
trouble sometimes
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
because of their need to help.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that, and so that's why it's so important that they also.
Yeah.
clear their trauma and work on that, which is one of the reasons we're so passionate yeah. about training people who can work with first responders
Definitely.
And also even training first responders.
Definitely. Definitely. What are your thoughts on, you know, just this idea of, you know, military and counselors, well, counselors, I guess, in general about, you know, when Cindy was being blamed essentially by that pastor, you know, we processed that a little bit, but, you know, this idea that, you know, counselors are, I guess, are they superheroes? They're limitless in
well,
their
and
abilities.
Of course, she wasn't even a counselor then. She was just a supervisor
oh,
on
yeah.
on staff. The
right.
She was just the staff sergeant, just the supervisor of that person. You know, during
yeah.
that time,
yeah.
and had spoken to him. So you know. It would just be, you know, you're going to your boss to say, hey, I'm having a rough day. My
sure,
life
sure,
isn't
sure.
isn't going the way I want it to be. So, you know, I'm not sure what to do. And of
yeah,
course,
yeah.
she didn't know he was going to leave and take his, you know, go buy a gun.
No,
obviously, she
no.
would have done something differently.
Especially hearing all the signs, him talking about looking forward to the future with his daughter and things
Absolutely.
Like that. Like people with hope tend to be people that
Who
think futuristically,
looks,
right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, they have a thought there. And so, you know, yeah. In fact, if anything, you want to talk about more deceptive signs, if there were any, I mean, that would have been a tough case.
Absolutely.
No question.
And so again, she wasn't even a counselor then.
Right.
But that's what we've seen with quite a few veterans.
Correct.
That they've been in that position and someone has taken their life.
Yeah.
And or attempted to take their life.
Right.
And they feel blame. And how many of them possibly have been blamed, you know, inadvertently by a pastor or
absolutely.
By, and I even asked Cindy, I should have brought up while she was still here, but I remember asking her, now, wait a minute, did he just sort of say it was your fault? And she was like, oh no, he said.
Yeah, that sounded like an explicit.
It was a blame. And,
you know,
I commend though her direct supervisor who then pulled them aside and said, this was not your fault.
Yeah, yeah.
This was not you.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if that didn't happen, you know, for Cindy and the others, you know, where, how much more could that have been, you know, a trauma carrying the guilt or whatever, you know,
to not have somebody. Could I have done something differently?
Yeah,
what
yeah.
could I have done differently?
You know, because I think that, you know, as we know with, you talked about earlier about the things that people carry, the anger, sadness, fear, guilt, hurt, shame, et cetera, you know, the limiting decisions too.
Oh,
and we
yes.
often form those mm-hmm. on our own anyway. You know, we have learnings about a life experience or whatever. It doesn't help the cause when somebody else, especially somebody of credibility or some position of stature, then feeds into that and feeds that limiting decision into us as well.
Right.
Right?
In front of a whole group of people.
Oh, yeah.
So it's in front of other people
yeah.
who report to her,
yep.
to those people, you know,
yep.
hey,
yep.
this was your
yep.
fault. I mean,
yep.
that's overwhelming.
Absolutely. And it's worth mentioning too, just because I feel like I threw out a term there and probably should just bring some clarification. I'll give my definition. You clarify mine and make sense of it as well. Limiting decision being this idea that it's a belief that a person has about themselves. They're not born with it. That doesn't necessarily match objective reality, right? But it's their reality. They've come to believe this about themselves and it really dictates the course of their life and certain behaviors, et cetera. What would you add to that?
Right. Well, and an example of that would be, for example, no one listens to me or
right,
I
right.
don't, you know, right. or things are my fault.
Right.
You know,
versus that event was my fault or no one listened to me on that day. You know, we're
yes,
making a broad generalization.
Exactly.
Right?
That's perfect. Yeah. No one
yeah.
listens, you yeah. know,
because it may have been true. Nobody listened to you that day, but that
right.
doesn't necessarily mean it was true, like of your life in general, you know. And when people come to believe that, you know,
but that's such a good differentiation,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Often we have a day as a kid, you know. I had a client that somebody cheated on his test. You know,
yes.
somebody looked at his test.
Yeah.
The teacher, both the kids got in trouble.
Yeah.
No one listened to him that day.
Yes.
He grew up, and it. You know, we think it sounds so trite, but he grew up then taking other situations that happened and filtering them with that filter.
Nobody ever listens to
no
me.
No one
right?
listens to me.
Yeah.
So that when he got to be an adult and he had to do speaking engagements and he had to go to job interviews, it was my voice doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I say doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, he went through two failed marriages and quite a few job losses before he finally found a place.
Yeah.
And then someone said, you need to get some therapy.
Yeah.
And he got some therapy and now, I mean, he's doing amazing, but it changes things.
How many people have these things? That's the crazy thing. I feel like, you know, we hear
do,
them all the
right?
time. But yeah. And I was going to say, like, we're not immune to this.
Right.
You know, we've certainly worked on these things personally, but you know, in a future episode, I've been determined to do this and my wife's already agreed to it. You know, we worked on one that she had at one point that was just crazy that related back to a 5-year-old experience in her childhood and that kind of stuff. And the outcome that changed was actually quite funny. So it's going to be a sort of a funny episode when we do it, but you know, we see that in people. And it literally does at an unconscious or a subconscious level affects behavior and affects the way they do life.
And actually when we bring Shannon, your wife on the show, calling her out here now, she also worked on something when she was two and a half. And
that was with you. I don't even think I even know that yet.
Yeah, so that'll be really fun because the other day she said to me, Carrie, I see things so different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it was just a limiting decision.
Totally.
You know, like
totally.
I can't. And I think it was having to do with my voice doesn't matter.
Yeah,
so
it may have been.
We'll have to get her on. Okay, Shannon, you got it?
We called her. Well, Nora, maybe it's going to be nice to finally bring her onto a show where we're not talking about like a birth trauma, you know, that
That's
sort of thing. It'd be something different category for sure.
That's true.
You know, but these are the kinds of things right there. And certainly that could have informed in Cindy and the others. So, you know, thankfully there was somebody of credibility and a, you know, a superior that, you know, helped to destroy it. But even still, even in spite of that, still a trauma there. And I'm, you know, for people that don't understand what we were talking about before, we were talking about that sort of calibration of that, you know, the SUD scale, the 0 to 10 that you had asked her before and how military, I mean, I literally have seen, you and I have seen people that, you know, they're in a full on distress. I mean, they visibly everything is there. Where you at 0 to 10? 0 is nothing, right? I'm at a 4 and I'm going, man, your 4 is like the way that I would react. You know, it's much higher. It's much crazier than that. And so, you know, our military guys are tough for sure. First responders, police, you know, tend to be the same kind of, you know, category
they,
there. So,
yeah.
So
they definitely
a,
minimize.
They
their,
do. They
their
do. So here would be a category, you know, or a question I would ask you maybe as we close today, because again, we want to be instructive and provide, you know, beyond just anecdotes and things like that. You know, somebody's listening out there and they go, okay, so what you're telling me is, like, there's no signs that you can read. That's not what we're saying, because there are signs that you do have to obey and pay attention to with people. We're just talking about the reality that, you know, sometimes there aren't signs, right? But Carrie, from your expertise, you know, what are, to a lay person out there who's not been trained, who doesn't have the experience that you have and everything, but they're interacting with their own sphere of influence, their family, friends, et cetera, coworkers, what are some things that you would kind of say, man, these are some things that you need to pay attention to? You know, when you see this kind of behavior, does anything come to mind on that that you would kind of speak to?
I mean, the traditional things that, yeah. You know, I said earlier, there's no typical, but of course, you know, if you see somebody who's all of a sudden not interacting or overly interacting, right? Mm. Because if they're making peace with people, you know, suddenly somebody you haven't heard from in years and they call and they say, hey, I just want to know, you know, want you to know I really appreciate you and you've meant a lot to me in my life. You know, somebody that does that and you haven't heard from them in a while and you know, ask those questions. Hey, how are you doing? How are you really doing? Because often people won't answer the first time, you know, and they won't, and letting somebody know that you, hey, I care. You know, I think we've heard from quite a few people who have been suicidal in the past that they said, you know, that day that I was considering it, someone reached out, someone said something to me that I wasn't expecting. I just say, I mean, more than anything, just be aware. Just notice if people aren't interacting anymore or there's been honestly any change in behavior that doesn't make sense or maybe it does make sense. Maybe there's something, you know, there's been a big breakup or something that, you know, a loss in the family and they don't, you know, they're over-processing it or they're not processing it at all. So any, you know, I think it's like doctors say when you're looking for something, well, anything out of the norm, well, what is that, right? We all have...
Well, it requires you to be in somebody's life and involved and calibrate what is their norm, right?
And that's what I think. I think we just all need to be really aware. I mean, I think often sometimes in our... especially with counselors, you know, it's like doctors healing their own family. You know, counselors, we're not watching our own... families as much as we should, you know, be paying attention, be aware of what's happening, what's changing. So that's, I mean, and honestly, what you said, we all have free will, and the person who's having any kind of feelings, I would say if you talk about certain things and your chest gets tight or you feel your arms feel funny or your head feels like it's swimming or your stomach has butterflies, be curious, like, why am I feeling like this? What's going on? What else am I, this doesn't seem like it should be that big of a deal. What else is going on? What else am I concerned about that I need to maybe reach out for help and just ask?
Well, and to your point there, and as we sort of close out the show today, the reality is there is help, right? And there are really good techniques and modalities, really good therapists like you, like Cindy and others that are trained to work with things like trauma. And so we always say, like, one of our sort of subtitles or sub slogans or whatever, you know, is this helping people discover a new normal of their deciding. You know, there's a lot of people out there living with a new normal, but it's not a new normal they ever asked for. And in the world of trauma and what we know now about how the brain heals, how the brain works, how the brain processes things, you know, I really feel like the work that's being done now is helping somebody get that new normal of their deciding, free of the trauma that they experienced.
Yes. And one of the things I would say on that note is so many people, what I believe is a limiting decision is they say, well, this is just my new normal. This is just my life now.
Yes.
I just have to live with this. Like I just have to live with this feeling. And I don't think we're called to live with that feeling. Like, I think it's much more powerful. Imagine even if you don't want to, even if you think like, well, I'm okay. I've been living with this. It's not, I'm surviving, you know, like Cindy, I'm surviving. I'm okay. But you don't realize you are living with that in the background in a shadow and go get help for someone else. Because once you feel that the change, you're going to be able to talk to somebody else about, I didn't even realize how this was impacting me until I did that, took this step. So that's,
you know, to the person out there, because time to time we get messages, you know, where that are scathing at times. I'm not going to lie. And I always have compassion for those because they come from people, you know, that, you guys are, you know, you're selling false hope or whatever. I want it to be said for the record that I think false hope is one of the most dangerous things that you can ever sell to anybody. And we regard what we do as, you know, this is a very fine line, and I would never purport something that would sell something like that because I know the danger that that causes.
Yeah. You know, Jeff, that's something that I definitely think we need a whole nother episode on.
We're going to.
The episode of false hope, because that is something that people say, oh, you know, you're giving false hope to people.
Yeah.
I would say that people who have trauma were people before they had trauma usually, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's still people after. So
yes.
I would never say that, oh, come and you're going to fix this trauma and your life is going to be perfect forever. No,
yeah. Because there's other things.
Yeah, there's other things.
Right.
And often people don't even realize that they're stuck in their trauma, and it's scary for them to let go of that because this is all they know.
Yeah.
And so I've been accused before of saying to somebody, oh, you don't want to let go of this, or you don't want to get better.
Yeah.
And I would never say you don't want to get better.
Yeah.
I believe that most people want to get better. But I do believe that sometimes people have been holding on to something for so long that it's hard to let go of it. You know, you have a limp and the doctor fixes it, but like, this is how I've always done these things. And I don't think anybody for a moment would want to hold on to that. But I think that, it happens, right?
That's
where I've always been. That's definitely, we need to
episode. We've teased a couple episodes that get me excited even just thinking about doing. And so, you know, I hope that gets the listeners excited as well. Guys, we always appreciate your feedback, and we thank you for your support and allowing us to continue to grow this show and do what we do and reach people. Subscribe out there. That always helps things, you know, just so we know that this is reaching you, and we'd love for you to share these episodes. You know somebody out there that needs to hear even today's content. And so, you know, drop them a line, text message, social media, whatever. And if you're looking to reach us, you can find us on social media at Life After PTSD on Instagram, Life After PTSD Media on YouTube and Facebook. And we will do what we do as always and drop another episode next Monday. And we'll see you then. Thanks for listening. To learn more about our work, visit lifeafterptsd.org. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to support the show, give us a 5-star review and share it with your tribe. Become a patron at patreon.com/lifeafterptsd. Life After PTSD is produced by Jeff McLaughlin. For production inquiries or to sponsor the show, email info@lifeafterptsd.org.